This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of Come Sundown by Nora Roberts, performed by Elizabeth Rogers. For Jason and Kat, the best of traveling companions. Part 1. A Journey. So, when a raging fever burns, we shift from side to side by turns, and 'tis a poor relief we gain to change the place, but keep the pain. Isaac Watts. Prologue. Western Montana, 1991. Alice Bodine relieved herself behind a thin screen of lodgepole pines. She'd had to trudge through knee-high snow for the screen, and her bare ass, with the dragonfly tattoo she'd had inked in Portland, shivered in the wind that soughed like the surf. Since she'd walked a solid 3 miles on the back road without seeing a single car or truck, she wondered why the hell she'd bothered. Some habits, she supposed, as she hitched her jeans up again, just didn't break. God knows, she'd tried. Tried to break habits, rules, conventions, and expectations. Yet here she was, hardly 3 years after her self-proclaimed emancipation from everything usual, all the ordinary, dragging her half-frozen ass home. She shifted her backpack on her shoulders as she high-stepped into her own footprints to get back to the sorry excuse for a road. The backpack contained all her worldly possessions, which included another pair of jeans, an AC/DC t-shirt, a Grateful Dead sweatshirt she'd taken off some forgotten guy back when she'd first gotten to Los Angeles, some soap and shampoo she'd copped during her mercifully brief stint cleaning rooms at a Holiday Inn in Rigby, Idaho, condoms, her stash of makeup, $15.38, and what was left of a nickel bag of pretty decent weed she'd swiped from a guy she'd partied with at a campground in eastern Oregon. She'd told herself she was aimed toward home due to her lack of funds, and the very idea of cleaning up some jerk's cum-stained sheets ever again. And there was some acknowledgement of how easy it would be to become one of the dead-eyed women she'd seen hooking on the shady side of so many streets in so many towns she'd passed through. She'd come close. She could admit that. You got hungry enough, cold enough, scared enough. The idea of selling your body, it was just sex, after all, for the price of a meal and a decent room, seemed okay. But the truth was, and there were times she faced the truth, there were some rules she wouldn't break. The truth was, she wanted home. She wanted her mother, her sister, her grandparents. She wanted her room with her posters all over the pretty pink walls and the windows looking out to the mountains. She wanted the smell of coffee and bacon in the kitchen in the mornings, the feel of a horse under her at a full gallop. Her sister was married. Hadn't it been the stupid, altogether traditional wedding that had set her off, that was the last straw? Renee might even have a kid by now, probably did, and was probably still as goddamn perfect as ever. But she missed even that, even the annoying perfection of Maureen. So she walked on, another mile, with the worn fleece jacket she'd bought at Goodwill barely holding off the cold, and the boots she'd had for more than 10 years slapping the snowpack on the skinny shoulder. Should have called home from Missoula, she thought now. Should have just swallowed her pride and called. Her grandpa would have come to get her, and he never lectured. But she'd envisioned herself striding up the road to the ranch, maybe even swaggering up that road. How everything would stop. Just stop. The ranch hands, the horses, even the cattle in the fields. The old hound, Blue, would lope out to greet her, and her mother would step out on the porch. The prodigal returns. Alice's sigh puffed out a stream of warm breath, whisked away in the stiff cold wind. She knew better, had known better, but snagging a ride in Missoula seemed like a sign, and it took her within 12 miles of home. She might not make it by nightfall, and that worried her. She had a flashlight in her pack, but the batteries were iffy. She had a lighter, but the thought of making a camp without tent or blanket, with no food, with the last of her water gone 2 miles back, had her pushing on, harder. She tried to imagine what they'd say to her. They'd be happy to see her. Had to be. Maybe they'd be pissed at her for taking off the way she did, with no more than a snotty note. But she'd been 18 and old enough to do what she wanted. And she hadn't wanted college, or the prison of marriage, or working some pissant job on the ranch. She'd wanted freedom, and she'd taken it. Now, she was 21, and making the choice to go home. Maybe she wouldn't mind working on the ranch so much. Maybe she'd even think about taking some college classes. She was a grown woman. The grown woman's teeth wanted to chatter, but she kept moving. She hoped her grandparents were around, and felt hard twists of guilt because she couldn't be absolutely sure Granny or Grandpa were still alive. "Of course they are," Alice assured herself. "It's just been 3 years. Grammy wouldn't be pissed. Or not for long. Maybe she'd scold some. 'Look how skinny you are. What on God's green earth have you done to your hair?'" Amused at the thought, Alice pulled her ski cap down snug over the short cap of hair she'd bleached out as blonde as she could manage. She liked being blonde, liked the way the more glamorous color made her eyes read greener. But most of all, she liked the idea of being enfolded in one of Grandpa's hugs, of sitting down to a big meal — Thanksgiving was almost here — and telling her whole stick-up-the-ass family of her adventures. She'd seen the Pacific Ocean, had strutted along Rodeo Drive like a movie star, had twice worked as an extra for an actual movie. Maybe getting real parts in real movies turned out to be a lot harder than she'd imagined, but she'd tried. She'd proved she could be on her own. She could do things, see things, experience things. And she could do it all again if they gave her too much grief. Annoyed, Alice blinked and swiped at the tears flooding her eyes. She wouldn't beg. She would not beg them to take her back, to take her in. God, she just wanted to be home. The angle of the sun told her she'd never make it by nightfall, and she could smell fresh snow in the air. Maybe. Maybe if she cut through the trees, across the fields, she could make it to the Skinner place. She stopped. Tired. Torn. Safer to stay on the road, but heading across the fields would cut off a good mile or more. Plus, there were a couple of cabins if she could remember her way. Bare bones for wilderness vacationers, but she could break in, get a fire going, maybe even find some canned food. She looked down the seemingly endless road, then over the snow-buried fields, toward the snow-capped mountains rising into a sky going gray-blue with dusk and the oncoming snow. Later, Alice would think of that indecision, that few minutes of hesitation standing in the bitter wind on the shoulder of the road, the few minutes before she took a step toward the fields, the mountains, that would have taken her into the lengthening shadows of the pines, away from the road. Though it was the first sound Alice had heard in more than 2 hours, other than her own breathing, her own bootsteps, the wind shuddering through the trees, the rattle of an engine didn't register at first. When it did, she scrambled back through the snow, felt her heart leap at the sight of the pickup chugging its way toward her. She stepped forward, and rather than sticking out her thumb, as she'd done countless times in her journeys, waved her arms in a signal of distress. She might have been gone for 3 years, but she'd been born and bred a country girl, a Westerner. No one would drive by a woman signaling for help on a lonely road. As it eased to a stop, Alice thought she'd never seen anything more beautiful than that rusted-out blue Ford, with its gun rack, tarp-covered bed, and a True Patriot sticker on the windshield. When the driver leaned over, rolled down the window, she had to fight off tears.
"Looks like you need some help."
"I could sure use a ride." She gave him a quick smile, sizing him up. She needed that ride, but she wasn't stupid. He wore a sheepskin coat that had some years on it, and a cutter-style brown hat over short dark hair. Good-looking, Alice thought, which always helped. Older. Had to be at least 40. His eyes, dark too, looked friendly enough. She could hear the line dance beat of country music from the radio.
"How far are you going?"
he asked in that western Montana drawl that sounded like music, too. "To the Bodine Ranch. It's just..."
"Sure. I know the Bodine place. Going right by it. Hop on in."
"Thanks. Thanks. I really appreciate it." She swung her backpack off, hauled it in after her as she climbed in the cab.
"You have a breakdown? I didn't see anything on the road."
"No." She settled the backpack at her feet, nearly speechless with relief at the warmth pumping out of the truck's heater. "I was heading in from Missoula. Hitched a ride, but they had to turn off about 6 miles back."
"You've been walking 6 miles?"
In bliss, she closed her eyes as the ice cubes that were her toes began to thaw. "You're the first truck I've seen in about 2 hours. I never figured on walking all the way. I'm really glad I don't have to now."
"Long walk. And for a little thing like you on her own. It's coming on dark soon."
"I know it. I'm lucky you came along."
"You're lucky," he repeated.
She didn't see the fist coming. It was so fast, so shocking. Her face seemed to explode from the blow. Even as her eyes rolled back, she slapped out. She didn't feel the second blow.
Moving quickly, thrilled the opportunity had simply fallen into his hands, he hauled her out of the truck cab, rolled her limp body into the bed of the truck under the tarp. He bound her hands, her feet, gagged her, then tossed an old blanket over her. He didn't want her to freeze to death before he got her home. They had more than a few miles to travel.
Chapter 1. Present day. Dawn bloomed, pink as a rose, tinting the snow-drenched mountains with delicate color. Elk bugled as they swam through mists on their morning pilgrimage, and the rooster crowed his insistent alarm. Savoring the last of her coffee, Bodine Longbow stood at the kitchen door to look and listen to what she considered the perfect start of a November day. The only thing that could make it better was one additional hour. Since childhood, she'd wished for a 25-hour day, had even written down all she could accomplish with just 60 minutes more. Since Earth's rotation didn't accommodate her, she made up for it, rarely sleeping beyond 5:30. When dawn broke, she had already completed her morning workout, a precise 60 minutes, showered, groomed, dressed for the day, checked emails and texts, eaten a breakfast of yogurt, which she was trying to convince herself to like, with granola that she didn't like any better than yogurt, while she checked her schedule on her tablet. Since her schedule already lived in her head, the check wasn't necessary, but Bodine believed in being thorough. Now, with the pre-dawn portion of the day in the bag, she could take a few moments to enjoy her morning latte. Double espresso, whole milk, and a squirt of the caramel she promised her inner critic she'd wean herself off of eventually. The rest of the household would pile in soon. Her father and brothers from checking on the stock, getting the ranch hands going. Since it was Clementine's day off, Bodine knew her mother would sail into the kitchen cheerfully and perfectly produce a Montana ranch breakfast. After feeding three men, Maureen would put the kitchen to rights before sailing off to the Bodine Resort, where she served as the head of sales. Maureen Bodine Longbow was a constant wonder to her daughter. Not only was Bodine dead sure her mother didn't actively wish for that extra hour a day, she obviously didn't need it to get everything done.
To maintain a solid marriage, help run two complex businesses, the ranch and the resort, while continuing to enjoy life to the fullest. Even as she thought it, Maureen breezed in. Her short, roasted chestnut hair crowned a face pretty as a rosebud. Lively green eyes smiled at Bodine. "Morning, my baby."
"Morning. You look great."
Maureen skimmed a hand down a narrow hip and the trim forest green dress. "I've got meetings on top of meetings today. Gotta make an impression." She slid open the old barn door that led to the pantry, took a white butcher's apron from the hook. Not that a pop of bacon grease would dare to land on that dress, Bodine thought.
"Make me one of those lattes, would you?" Maureen asked as she fastened the apron. "Nobody makes them as good as you."
"Sure. I've got a meeting straight off this morning with Jesse," Bodine said, referring to the resort's events manager of 3 months, Jessica Bazoff. "About Linda Sue Jackson's wedding. Linda Sue's coming in at 10.
Your daddy tells me Roy Jackson's crying in his beer over the cost of marrying off his girl. But I know for a fact Linda Sue's ma is determined to pull out every stop, and then some. She'd send that girl down the aisle to a celestial chorus of angels if we could provide it."
Bodine meticulously steamed the milk for the latte.
"For the right price, Jessie'd probably manage it."
"She's working out real well, isn't she?" With an enormous skillet on the 8-burner range, Maureen began frying up bacon.
"I like that girl."
"You like everybody," Bodine handed her mother the latte. "Life's happier if you do. If you look for it, you can find something good about anybody."
"Adolf Hitler," Bodine challenged.
"Well, being what he was, he gave us a line in the sand most never want to cross again. That's a good thing."
"Nobody's like you, Mom."
Bodine bent from her superior height. She'd passed her mother's 5'3" at 12 and had kept going another 5 inches. Kissed Maureen's cheek.
"I've got enough time to set the table for you before I go."
"Oh, honey, you need breakfast, too."
"I had some yogurt."
"You hate that stuff."
"I only hate it when I'm eating it, and it's good for me."
Maureen sighed, lifting the bacon out to drain, adding more. "I swear. Sometimes I think you're a better ma to yourself than I ever was."
"Best mom ever," Bodine countered, taking a stack of the everyday plates from the cabinet.
She heard the racket seconds before the back door opened. The men in her life piled in along with a pair of dogs.
"Mind you, wipe your boots."
"Oh, now, Renee, as if we'd forget."
Sam Longbow took off his hat. Nobody ate at Maureen's table wearing a hat. He stood 6'3", most of it leg, a raw-boned, handsome man with silver wings sweeping through his black hair, with character lines fanning out from the corners of deep brown eyes. He had a crooked left incisor, which Bodine thought added charm to his smile. Chase, 2 years Bodine senior, hung his cattleman's hat on the peg, shrugged out of his barn jacket. He'd gotten his height and build from his father, all the Longbow siblings had, but in face and in coloring he favored his mother. Rory, 3 years her junior, combined the two with deep brown hair, lively green eyes, in a 22-year-old version of Sam Longbow's face.
"Can you make enough for one more, Mom?"
Maureen arched her eyebrows at Chase.
"I can always make enough for one more. Who's the one?"
"I asked Cal to breakfast."
"Well, set another plate," Maureen ordered. "It's been too long since Callan Skinner's been at our table."
"He's back?"
Chase nodded at Bodine, headed to the coffee machine.
"Got here last night. He's settling into the shack, like we talked about. A hot breakfast'll help that along."
While Chase downed black coffee, Rory added generous doses of milk and sugar to his own.
"He doesn't look like some Hollywood cowboy." "A disappointment to our youngest," Sam said as he washed his hands in the farmhouse sink. "Rory hoped he'd walk around with jangling spurs, a silver band around his hat, and polished up boots. Didn't have any of them."
Rory snagged some bacon.
"Doesn't look much different than when he left. Older, I guess." Not a full year older than me. Save some of that bacon for the rest of us, Chase added.
I've got more, Maureen said placidly and lifted her face when Sam bent down to kiss her.
You look pretty as a candy box, Renee. Smell just as pretty, too.
I've got a morning full of meetings. Speaking of meetings, Bodine checked her watch, I have to go. Oh, honey, can't you stay to say hey to Callan? You haven't seen that boy in near to 10 years.
8 years, Bodine thought, and had to admit she was curious to see him again, but
I just can't, sorry. I'll see him around. And you too, she said, kissing her father. Rory, I need to go over some things with you at the office.
I'll be there, boss.
She snorted at that, aimed for the mudroom, where she'd already put her packed-for-the-day briefcase.
Snow's coming by afternoon,
she called, bundling into her coat, hat, scarf, and pulling on gloves, walked out into the cold morning. She was running a minute behind, so she walked briskly to her truck. She'd known Callan was coming back, had been at the family meeting about hiring him on as head horseman for the ranch. He'd been Chase's closest friend as long as she could remember, and had wavered between being the bane of her existence to her first secret crush, back to bane, back to crush. She couldn't quite remember which category he'd been in when he'd left Montana. Now, as she drove over the corrugated snowpack of the ranch road, it occurred to her he'd been younger than Rory when he'd left home. About 20, she calculated, no doubt pissed and frustrated at losing the bulk of his birthright. Land, she thought now, her father had bought from the Skinners when, if you said it politely, his father had fallen on hard times. He'd fallen on hard times because he gambled any good times away. Dead crap as a gambler, she'd heard her father say once, and as addicted to it as some are to the bottle. So with the land he'd surely loved, down to less than 50 acres, the house and a few outbuildings, Callan Skinner had set off to make his own way. According to Chase, Cal had done just fine, ending up wrangling horses for the movies. Now, with his father dead, his mother a widow, his sister married with a toddler and another baby on the way, he'd come back. She'd heard enough to know that what Skinner land remained wasn't worth what was owed on it from mortgages and loans, and the house stood empty, as Mrs. Skinner had moved in with her daughter and family in a pretty house in Missoula, where Savannah and her husband owned a craft shop. Bodine expected another meeting soon, about buying the last 50 acres, and as she drove, she weighed whether that parcel would work better for the ranch or resort. Fix up the house, she mused. Rent it to groups. Or for events. Smaller weddings, corporate parties, family reunions. Or save that time and expense, tear it down, build from there. She entertained herself with possibilities as she drove under the arching Bodine Resort sign with its shamrock logo. She circled around, noting the lights on in the trading post as whoever caught the first shift prepared to open for the day. They had a trunk show this week with leather goods and crafts, and that would lure in some of the late fall guests. Or, with Rory's team's marketing blast, draw in non-guests who'd stay for lunch at the feed bag. She pulled up in front of the long, low building with its wide front porch that housed reception. It always made her proud. The resort was born before she was, at a gathering with her mother, her grandmother, and her great-grandmother, with her grandmother, Cora Riley Bodine, driving the train. What had started as a bare-bones dude ranch had grown into a luxury resort that offered 5-star cuisine, personalized service, adventure, pampering, events, entertainment, and more, all spread over more than 30,000 acres, including the working ranch. And all, she thought as she got out of the truck, with the priceless beauty of western Montana. She hurried inside, where a couple of guests were enjoying coffee in front of the massive roaring fire. She caught the fall scents of pumpkin and cloves, approved as she waved a hand toward the desk, intent on reaching her office and getting organized. Detoured to the desk when Sal, the perky redhead Bodine had known since grade school, signaled her.
Wanted you to know Linda Sue just called to say she'd be a little late.
She always is.
Yeah, but this time she's saying it instead of just being it. She's going by to pick up her mother.
The solid foundation of Bodine's day suffered its first crack.
Her mother's coming to the meeting?
Sorry,
Sal offered a sorrowful smile.
That's mostly Jesse's problem, but thanks for the heads up.
Jesse's not in yet.
That's all right. I'm early for the meeting.
You always are,
Sal called out as Bodine veered off, taking the turn that led back to the resort manager's office. Her office. She liked the size of it. Big enough to hold meetings with staff or managers, small enough to keep those meetings intimate and personal. She had a double window looking out on stone paths, a portion of the building that held the feed bag, and the more exclusive dining hall, and fields rolling toward the mountains. She had deliberately arranged her grandmother's old desk with her back to that window, avoiding distractions. She had two high-backed leather chairs that had once graced the office in the ranch house, and a small sofa, once her mother's and now reupholstered with a sturdy weave in a strong summer blue. She hung her coat, hat, and scarf on the coat rack in the corner, smoothed a hand over her hair, black as her father's, worn in a long, straight tail down her back. She had the look of her grandfather, so his widow always said. Bodine had seen photographs and acknowledged her resemblance to the young, doomed Rory Bodine, who'd died in Vietnam before his 23rd birthday. He'd had bold green eyes and a wide, top-heavy mouth. His black hair had had a wave to it, while hers ran ruler straight. But she had his high cheekbones, his small, pugnacious nose, and the white Irish skin that required oceans of sunscreen. But she liked to think she'd inherited her grandmother's canny business sense. She went to the counter that held the pod machine that made tolerable coffee, took a mug to her desk to go over her notes for her first two meetings of the day. As she finished up a phone call and an email simultaneously, Jessica came in. Like Maureen, Jessie wore a dress, a sharp red in this case, paired with a short leather jacket the color of top cream. The short high-heeled boots wouldn't last 5 minutes in the snow, but they matched the red dress as if they'd been dyed in the same batch. Bodine had to admire the slick, unassailable style. Jessica wore her streaked blonde hair pulled back in a sleek coil, as she often did on work days. Like the boots, her lips matched the dress perfectly and suited her slashing cheekbones, her slim, straight nose, and her eyes of clear, glacier blue. She sat as Bodine finished the call, taking her own phone out of her jacket pocket and scrolling through something. Bodine hung up, sat back.
The coordinator for the Western Riders Association is going to contact you about a 3-day retreat and farewell banquet.
Do they have dates? Numbers?
Projected number 98. Dates are January 9 arrival, departure on January 12.
This January?
Bodine smiled. Their other venue fell through, so they're scrambling. I checked, and we can work this. We slow down right after the holidays. We'll hold the mill for them, for the meeting rooms and banquet, and the number of cabins she requested for 48 hours. The coordinator, Mandy, seemed organized, if a little desperate. I've just now sent you, my mother, and Rory an email on the particulars. Their budget should work.
All right. I'll talk to her, get a meal plan, transportation, activities, and so on.
Riders?
Yep.
I'll alert the saloon.
Jessica made another note on her phone. I've never organized an event for riders that doesn't run a big bar tab.
Good for us.
Bodine wagged a thumb at the little coffee maker.
Help yourself.
Jessica simply lifted the Irish green Bodine Resort insulated cup of water she carried habitually.
How do you live without coffee?
Bodine wondered sincerely.
Or Coke? How do you live on water?
Because there's also wine. And there's yoga. Meditation.
All of those things put you to sleep.
Not if they're done right.
You really should do more yoga.
And meditation would probably help you cut back on the caffeine.
Meditation just makes me think about all the other things I'd rather be doing.
Leaning back, Bodine swiveled her chair side to side. I really like that jacket.
Thanks. I went into Missoula on my day off. Splurged. Which is nearly as good as yoga for the mind and spirit. Sal tells me Linda Sue's going to be a little late. Newsflash. And her mother's coming with her. That's the latest. We'll deal. They're booking 54 cabins for 3 days. Rehearsal dinner, wedding, wedding reception, basically taking over Zen Town the day before the wedding, in addition to the other activities. The wedding's only 4 weeks away, so that's not much time to change their minds, add more fluff. Odine's wide mouth tipped into a smirk. You've met Dolly Jackson, right? I can handle Dolly. Better you than anybody, Bodine decided. Let's go over what we've got. They went over the list, top to bottom, and had moved on to a smaller holiday party event the week before Christmas, when Sal stuck her head in the door. Linda Sue and her mom. Be right there. Wait, Sal? Order up some mimosas. Now you're talking.
Smart, Jessica said after Sal popped out again. Fuss over them and soften them up.
Linda Sue's not so bad. Chase dated her for about 5 minutes in high school.
Bodine rose, tugged her dark brown vest into place.
But mimosas never hurt. Let's soldier up.
Pretty, curvy, easily flustered Linda Sue paced the lobby with her hands clasped between her breasts.
Can't you just see it, Mom? Everything decorated for Christmas, the trees, the lights, a fire going like now. And Jessica said the mill's just going to sparkle.
It better. I'm telling you, we need those big candle stands, Linda Sue. At least a dozen. Gold ones, like I saw in that magazine. Not the shiny gold, the classy gold.
As she talked, Dolly scribbled on a page in the brick-thick, bride-white wedding binder she carried. Her eyes looked slightly mad.
And red velvet. Dark red, not bright red. Laid out on the path from where the sleigh stops instead of white. It'll show off your dress better. And I'm telling you, we need a harpist wearing red velvet with that classy gold trim to play while people are coming in to get seated.
Jessica drew in a breath. We're going to need more mimosas. I hear you. Odine pasted on a smile, stepped into the breach. Bodine gave the classy gold wedding 40 minutes, then escaped. In the 3 months since Jessica had filled the slot as events manager, she'd proved herself more than capable of handling a fussy mother and a dithering bride-to-be. In any case, Bodine had a meeting set with the food and beverage manager, needed to answer a couple of questions from one of their drivers, and wanted to cross a discussion with their horse manager off her list. The winding, hilly gravel road from her office to the Bodine Activity Center, the BAC, ran nearly a half mile. But the minute she stepped outside into that apple-crisp air, she decided she wanted the hike rather than the drive. She could smell the snow now, judged it would start to fall before mid-afternoon. But for now, the sky hung pale blue under the crowding clouds. She walked by a couple of the little green Kias they provided to guests during their stay, on property use only, then turned onto the narrow gravel road and saw no one. Fields spread on either side, buried in snow. She spotted a trio of deer loping through it, white tails flashing, dark winter coats thick. The cry of a hawk had her gaze lifting to watch it circle. Falconry ranked high on her 3-year plan for the resort, and she'd made progress in that area as she came to the end of year one. The wind whipped snow off the ground, sent it swirling around her like sparkling dust while her boots rang on the iron-hard ground. She spotted movement near the BAC, some of the staff out with a few of the horses in the sheltered paddock. The warm smell of horses carried to her, as did the scents of oiled leather, hay, and grain. She lifted a hand in greeting as the man in the heavy barn coat and the brown Stetson glanced over. Abe Cotter patted the paint mare he'd been brushing, then walked a few steps to meet Bodine.
"Gonna snow," she said. "Gonna snow," he agreed. "Had a pair out of Denver want a ride. They knew what they were doing, so Maddie took 'em out and about for a bit.
Just got back.
Just let me know if you want to rotate any to the ranch. Switch out.
Can do. You walk down from the main?
I wanted the walk. The air.
But you know, I think I'll saddle one up. Ride it back. Go around to see the ladies of Bodine House.
You tell them hey from me. I'll saddle you up, Bo. 3 socks could use a ride. You'll be saving my old bones.
Old my ass.
I'm 69 in February.
You say that's old, you'll have my grannies taking some shots at your bones. He laughed, stepped back, and gave the paint another rub.
Maybe so. But I'm taking that winter break like we talked about. Heading to see my brother in Arizona, me and the wife. Right after Christmas and through to April.
She didn't wince, though she wanted to.
We'll miss you and Etta around here.
Winters get harder when the years add up.
He checked the paint's hoof, pulled out a hoof pick to clean it.
Not so much call for trail rides and such in the winter. Maddie can step up, manage the horses for a couple months. She's got a good head on her shoulders.
I'll talk to her. Is she inside? I've got to go in and talk to Matt anyway.
In there now. I'll get 3 socks ready for you.
Thanks, Abe. She started out, walked backward.
What the hell are you going to do in Arizona?
Damned if I know. Except stay warm.
She walked around inside the building. Starting in spring, right through till October, the big barn-like space would hold groups gearing up for whitewater rafting, ATV jaunts, trail rides, cattle drives, and guided hikes. Once the snow got serious, things tended to slow down, and now the space echoed with her footsteps as she crossed to the curved counter and the resort's activities manager.
How you doing, Bo?
Doing, Matt, and that's enough. How about you?
Quiet enough, we're catching up on things. We've got a group out cross-country skiing, another shooting skeet, family group of 12s taking a trail ride tomorrow, so I gave Chase the word on that. He said Cal Skinner's back and going to handle that end.
That's right. She talked to Matt about inventory, replacing gear and equipment, then pulled out her phone with her notes to discuss additional activities for the Jackson wedding. I'll be sending you an email with all the details. For now, just make sure you block all this out. Pull in whoever you need to cover it all.
I got it.
Abe said Maddie was in here?
She's in the ladies.
Okay. She glanced at the time on her phone before pocketing it. She wanted that ride to see the grannies, then really had to get back to the office. I'll wait a few. She wandered to the vending machine. Jessica was right. She should drink more water. She didn't want water. She wanted something sweet and fizzy. She wanted a damn Coke. Damn that, Jesse, she thought, plugging in the money and taking out a bottle of water. She took the first annoyed swig as Maddie stepped out of the restroom. Hey, Maddie. Bodine headed over to the horsewoman. She thought Maddie looked a little pale, a little tired around the eyes, despite her quick smile.
Hi, Bo. Just back from the trail.
I hear. You okay? You look a little peaked.
I'm fine.
After waving it away, Maddie puffed out a breath.
Do you have time to sit a minute?
Sure I do. Odine gestured to one of the little tables scattered around the room. Is everything okay? Here? At home?
It's great. Really great.
Maddie, a lifetime friend, sat and pushed back the brim of the hat that sat on the chin-length swing of her sunny blonde hair.
I'm pregnant. You're... Maddie! That's great! Isn't it great? It's great, and it's wonderful and amazing and a little scary. Thad and I decided, why wait? We only got married last spring, and the plan was to hold off a year, maybe two. Then we said, why do that? So we dived right in.
She laughed, then tapped Bodine's water.
Can I have a sip of that?
Take it all.
I'm so happy for you, Maddie. Are you feeling all right? I puked 3 times a day the first couple months. First thing in the morning, lunchtime, and dinner time. I get tired quicker, but the doctor says that's how it goes. And the puking should let up altogether pretty soon. I hope to God. I guess it has, a little. Just now I was queasy, but I didn't barf, so that's something. Thad must be doing backflips over the moon. He is. How far along are you? 12 weeks come Saturday. Beau opened her mouth, closed it again, then took the water back for another gulp. 12. After sighing out a breath, Maddie bit her bottom lip. I almost told you straight off, but everything says how you should wait to get through the first 3 months, the first trimester. We haven't told anybody but our parents. You just have to tell them. And even then, we waited until I had 4 weeks in. You sure don't look pregnant. I'm gonna. And truth is, my jeans are so tight in the waist already, I've got them hooked up with a carabiner. You do not. I do. To prove it, Maddie lifted up her shirt, showed Beau the little silver clip. And look at this. Maddie lifted her cap, bending her head to show a good inch of brown roots bisecting the blonde. They don't want you dyeing your hair. I'm not going to take off my hat until this baby comes, I swear. I haven't seen my natural-born color since I was 13, and you helped me color it with that box of Nice and Easy. And we used some to put a blonde streak in my hair that ended up looking like a slice of neon pumpkin. I thought it looked so cool. I'm a blonde in my heart, Beau, but I'm going to be a pregnant brunette. A fat, waddling around, peeing every 5 minutes brunette. On a laugh, Odine passed the water back. As she drank, Maddie stroked a hand over her as-yet-invisible baby bump. I feel different. I really do. And it's a kind of wonder. Odine, I'm going to be a mother. You're going to be a terrific mother. I've got my mind set on that. But, well, there's another thing I'm not supposed to be doing. Riding. With a nod, Maddie drank again. I've been dragging my feet there, I know. Geez, I've been riding since I was a baby myself, but the doctor's firm on it. So am I. You went out on the trail today, Maddie. I know it. I should have told Abe, but I thought I should tell you first. Then he's talking about how I can take over for him while he's gone this winter. I didn't want to say because he really wants this trip, and I could just see him putting it aside.
He won't put it aside, and you won't be in the saddle until you get the all-clear from your doctor. That's it.
Biting her lip again, a sure sign of anxiety, Maddie twisted and untwisted the cap on the water bottle.
There's the lessons, too.
We'll cover them.
She'd figure it out, Odine thought.
That's what she did. There's more to the horses than riding, Maddie.
I know it. I already do some of the paperwork. I can groom and feed and drive the horse trailer, drive the guests to the equestrian center. I can...
What you can do is get me a list, from your doctor, of the do's and the don'ts. What's on the do side, you do. What's on the don't side, you don't.
The thing is, the doctor's awful cautious, and...
So am I, Bodine interrupted. I get the list, and you stick to it, or I let you go.
Slumping back, Maddie sulked.
Thad said you'd say just that.
You didn't marry an idiot.
And he loves you.
So do I. Now you're going home for the rest of the day.
Oh, I don't need to go home.
You're going home, Beau repeated. Taking a nap. After the nap, you're calling your baby doctor, telling him it's her.
Whatever.
You tell her to make up that list and send it to you, to copy me. Then we'll go from there.
Worst thing, Maddie, you switch a saddle for a desk chair for a few months.
Odine smiled.
You're going to get fat.
I'm kind of looking forward to it.
Good, because it's gonna happen. Now go home.
Odine stood, leaned over to give Maddie a hard hug.
And congratulations. Thanks. Thanks, Beau. I'm going to tell Abe before I leave. Tell him you've got it all covered, all right? do that. In fact, I'm telling everybody. I've been dying to since I peed on the stick. Hey, Matt!
Rising, Maddie patted her belly.
I'm pregnant!
Holy shit!
Bodine had time to see him boost himself right over the counter and run over to lift Maddie off her feet. Parents got told about babies first, Bodine thought, as she went back outside. But there was a lot of family around here. Chapter 2. As she rode, Bodine worked out what had to be done, what could be done, and what made the most sense to do. Losing two of her key horse people, one until spring, one for a solid 8 months, created a puzzle. She had the pieces. She just needed to find the best way to fit them into the hole. Snow trickled, thin and scant for now, a harbinger of what would come. She liked the smell of it, the way a hawk glided through it overhead, and a fat rabbit hopped up, vanished, hopped up, as it raced across a wide, white field. She nudged Three Socks into a quick, bright trot, then, reading him, let him stretch it into a lovely, rolling lope. She spotted one of the maintenance trucks rumbling down the road from the high timber cabins, and gave herself and her mount the pleasure of taking the longer route around, where the world opened up to the view of white mountains rising up into a soft and pale gray sky. For a while, she let her mind empty. She'd solve the puzzle, fix the problem, do what had to be done. She rode past the white tents of Zentown, up the rise by the snuggled cabins they called Mountain View Estates, and wound around again to the road toward her granny's house. It sat back from the road, leaving room for the gardening they both enjoyed. A white dollhouse with fancy blue trim, big windows to let in the views, and generous porches front and back for just sitting. She rode the gelding around the back to the granny's little barn, dismounted. After giving him an appreciative rub, she tethered him. She walked through the thin snow to the back porch, where she industriously wiped her boots on the mat. The scent of something wonderful simmering on the stove caught her the minute she stepped inside. As she unbuttoned her coat, she walked to the pot to sniff. Chicken and leeks, she mused, inhaling. What her granny called cockaliki. She glanced around. The eat-in kitchen opened to a sitting area with a cushy couch, a few easy chairs, and a huge flat screen. The grannies loved their shows. Some daytime drama with a pair of impossibly beautiful people currently played. She spotted the needlepoint basket, Granny's, and the crocheting basket, Nana's, but neither of the women. She checked in the guest bathroom / home office, found it tidy and empty. She stepped out where a sitting room with its fireplace simmering like the soup bisected the two little bedroom suites. She started to call out, then heard her grandmother's voice from the right.
I fixed it. Told you I'd fix it.
Cora strode out of her bedroom with a shiny pink toolbox in one hand. She smothered a squeal, slapped a hand to her heart.
Sweet baby Jesus, Bodine, you scared the life out of me. Ma, Bodine's here.
Tools rattling, Cora hurried over to hug Bodine. Ugg slippers, the scent of Chanel No. 5... a body so slim and agile it belied her years, clad in Levi's and a soft, chunky sweater her own mother would have knitted. Bodine drew in her scent.
What did you fix?
Oh, the sink in my bathroom was leaking like a sieve.
Do you want me to call maintenance?
You sound like your Grammy. I've been fixing what needs fixing most of my life. Now I fixed the leak.
Course you did.
Bodine kissed each of Cora's soft cheeks, smiled into the sharp blue eyes.
You got something needs fixing?
I'm going to be short two horsemen, but I'm working on fixing that.
That's what we do, isn't it? Ma! Bodine's here, for God's sake. I'm coming, aren't I? No need to shout.
While Cora had let her hair, worn in an angled wedge, go to salt and pepper, Miss Fancy's stubbornly remained the red of her youth. A few months shy of 90,
She might admit to moving somewhat slower than she once had, but she was proud to say she had all her teeth, could hear anything she damn well wanted to, and only needed cheaters for close work. She was small, more round than plump. She favored shirts or caps with statements she surfed for and bought off the internet. Today's read, "This is what a feminist looks like."
"Prettier every time I see you," Miss Fancy said when Bodine hugged her.
"You just saw me 2 days ago."
"Doesn't make it any less true. Come on and sit down. I need to check that soup."
"It smells amazing."
"Needs another hour or more if you can stay."
"I really can't. I've got to get back. I just rode by to see you first."
Miss Fancy stirred her soup while Cora put away her toolbox.
"Tea and cookies, then," Cora decreed. "There's always time for tea and cookies."
Bodine reminded herself she was eating healthier, avoiding sweet snacks, empty carbs.
"Cora and I baked snickerdoodles last evening."
Miss Fancy smiled as she set the kettle on a burner. Why did it have to be snickerdoodles?
"I could take time for a cookie. You sit down, Grammy. I'll make the tea."
She got the pot, the cups, the leaf strainers, as neither woman would lower themselves to having a tea bag in the house.
"Y'all are missing your show," Bodine pointed out.
"Oh, we've got it recording,"
Miss Fancy told her, brushed it away.
"It's more fun to watch in the evenings and zip right through the commercials." "I've tried explaining to her the show doesn't have to be on and running to record, but she won't believe it." "It doesn't make a lick of sense," Miss Fancy told her daughter, "and I'm not taking chances. I heard that Skinner boys come back from Hollywood and working on the ranch."
"You heard right."
"I always liked that boy,"
Cora set a plate of cookies on the table.
"Good looking as they come."
Miss Fancy took a cookie.
"With just enough troublemaker in him to make him interesting. Chase and his serious ways was the better for it. And you were sweet on him," Cora said to Bodine.
"No, I wasn't."
The grannies exchanged almost identical smirking looks.
"I was 12.
"And how do you know?" "Had the pining eyes."
Miss Fancy patted a hand over her heart.
"Hell, I'd have been sweet on him myself if I'd been younger, or him older."
"What would Grandpa have had to say?" Bodine wondered.
"That married and dead aren't the same. We were married 67 years before he passed, and the both of us were free to look all we wanted. Touching, now, that's when married and dead are the same."
On a laugh, Bodine brought the tea to the table.
"Tell that boy to come by and see us,"
Cora demanded.
"A good-looking man perks the day up."
"I will."
Bodine eyed the cookies. She'd eat healthy later. By the time Bodine finished for the day, the snow was falling fast and thick. She found herself more than grateful for the cookies in the afternoon, as she'd missed any excuse for lunch and now ran very late for dinner. By the time she parked the truck back at the ranch, she was ready to eat whatever was at hand, after a glass of wine. She shed her outdoor gear in the mudroom, hitched up her briefcase, and found Chase in the kitchen pulling a beer from the refrigerator.
"Beef stew on the stove," he told her. "Mom said to keep it on warm till you got here."
Red meat, she thought. She was trying to cut back on red meat. Oh, well. Where is everybody?
Rory had a date. Mom said she was going to soak the rest of her life in the tub, and Dad's probably in there with her.
Instantly, Bodine tapped the heel of her hand on her temple. "Why do you put that in my head?"
"The look in his eye put it in mine.
I believe in sharing." He waggled the bottle he held.
"Want a beer?"
"I'm having wine."
"A glass of red wine every day is good for you. You can look it up," she insisted when he smirked at her. Maybe she poured with a very generous hand, but it was still one glass.
"So, Maddie's pregnant,"
How the hell do you know? Annoyed, she drank wine with one hand and scooped stew into a bowl with the other.
Maddie texted Thad how she told you and just about everybody else within shouting distance, so he told me, and just about everybody else within shouting distance. I was waiting for it anyway.
Waiting for it? Why?
It's a look in the eyes, Odine.
It's in the eyes.
And a couple comments here and there about fatherhood and such.
If you suspected as much, why didn't you pin him on it? Annoyed, she gave Chase a hard poke in the side. If I'd known a few weeks back, I could have hung on to one of the seasonal horsemen.
And look who I'm talking to, she said, grabbing a spoon from the drawer. Never ask a question, Charles Samuel Longbow. The answer comes around anyway. I'm taking my beer in the other room by the fire.
Sticking the spoon in the stew, Bodine followed him. Like her brother, she sat on the big couch, putting her feet up on the table. I called every seasonal I knew could handle being in charge. I need more than a rider. The handful I tried all have winter work already. She ate stew, mulled on it. I've got a few weeks before Abe's gone to the damn desert, but I don't like putting somebody up front I don't know. I haven't had a good chance to train. I've got Ben and Carol, but as good as they are, they're not managers.
Use Cal.
Cal?
Yeah, he can switch back and forth easy enough. He's as good as it gets with horses, and he's a manager. You get too squeezed, Dad and I can fill some holes. Rory, too. Or Mom. Hell, Nana can take trail rides. Rides pretty much every day, anyway.
I went by to see her and Grammy today. Rode three socks. When Nana found out, she wanted to ride him back to the BAC for me. Got a little put out when I wouldn't let her because of the snow. She shouldn't be taking trail rides in the winter. In his deliberate way, Chase nodded, drank more beer.
She could do lessons.
Yeah, I've thought of that. She'd like it. Well, if I can pull from the ranch on this, at least while Abe's gone, it would save me from finding somebody else. You're not completely useless, Chase.
Me?
He swigged some beer.
I've got untapped uses.
I don't suppose those uses run to where we come up with about 10 miles of red velvet, a dozen gold candle stands 5 feet high, and a female harpist in a red velvet dress.
For now, those remain untapped.
Linda Sue's wedding. Her mother came with her today and added, or changed, or complained about every damn thing. A waste of mimosas, Bodine muttered.
You wanted to manage the place.
Yeah, and I love it, even on days like this. Besides, the velvet and the harpist and the gold, they're Jessica's problem. The fact she didn't tell Dolly Jackson to shut the hell up proves I was smart to hire her.
Never figured she'd last this long.
Happy with his feet up, he studied the snow falling free outside the window.
And she hasn't gotten through a Montana winter yet.
She'll last. Why wouldn't she?
City girl. East City.
And the best events manager we've had since Martha retired 5 years ago. I don't have to check and recheck everything she does.
You do anyway.
Not as much as I did. She looked out the wide window as Chase did, watched the snow fall against the dark. We're in for about a foot. I better text Len, make sure we're getting the roads plowed.
Check and recheck.
That's my job. Bodine shifted her gaze to the ceiling. Do you really think they're up there in the tub together?
I'd bet money on it.
I don't think I can go up there yet. I think I'm going to need another glass of wine first.
Get me another beer while you're at it.
His gaze followed hers upward.
I'd just as soon give them another half hour before I head up myself.
Bodine spent most of the next day checking the roads that wound through the resort, approving proposals, putting others on the back burner, and fast-tracking a request for new linens for cabins. She'd just settled in to review the winter promotions, brochures, mailers, website, Facebook, and Twitter, when Rory strolled in. He dropped into one of her chairs, sprawled out as if he planned to stay there a while.